Hello and welcome to Ox Talk for Tuesday the 14th of October 2025. My name is Guy and I've compiled the edition for this week. News items have been selected from local Oxford papers and recorded at home by Ali Proven and Ralph Weirs. We also have a short story read by David Brassington. The USBs have been copied and distributed by Michelle Lawhall. Sunrise today is at 7:27 a.m. and sunset is at 6:13 p.m. Before the news, we mark some events which happened on October the 14th in history. In 1586, Mary, Queen of Scots, went on trial for conspiring against Queen Elizabeth I. Mary had been implicated in a plot to assassinate Queen Elizabeth. During her trial, Mary refuted all charges and protested that she had been denied the opportunity to review the evidence, that her papers had been removed from her, that she was denied access to legal counsel, and that as a foreign anointed queen, she had never been an English subject and therefore could not be convicted of treason. In 1892, Arthur Conan Doyle published The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, a collection of 12 short stories that had been originally serialized in the Strand magazine. Due to the popularity of the main characters, 4 further collections were published between 1894 and 1927, as well as 5 full-length novels. In 1964, Martin Luther King Jr. was announced as the winner of the Nobel Peace Prize. The previous year, King was one of the leaders of the March on Washington, whose purpose was to advocate for the civil and economic rights of African Americans. At this march, King delivered his famous I Have a Dream speech on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. In 1969, the United Kingdom introduced the 50 pence coin, replacing the 10 shilling note, in anticipation of decimalisation in 1971. In 1979, the first gay and lesbian civil rights march on Washington, D.C. happened. It drew between 75,000 and 125,000 people and demanded equal civil rights and urged the passage of protective civil rights legislation. In 2012, Felix Baumgartner became the first person to break the sound barrier without a vehicle, after jumping from a helium balloon soaring 24 miles above the surface of the Earth. In 2020, a copy of William Shakespeare's first folio sold for a record $9.98 million at auction in New York. The folio, first published in 1623, 7 years after Shakespeare's death, contained 36 of his plays, 18 of which are not known to have been previously printed. And births on this day. In 1633, James II, King of England, Scotland and Ireland, was born in St James's Palace, London, as the second surviving son of Charles I and Henrietta Maria. He was given the title Duke of York on his birth. In 1644, William Penn was born at Tower Hill, London. Penn was an English writer, theologian, religious thinker and influential Quaker, who founded the province of Pennsylvania in America during the British colonial era. In 1734, Francis Lightfoot Lee, American advocate for independence and representative of Virginia, who, along with 55 others, signed the U.S. Declaration of Independence in 1776, was born in Stratford Hall Plantation, Westmoreland County, Virginia Colony. In 1890, Dwight D. Eisenhower, 34th U.S. President of the USA, was born in Denison, Texas. During World War II, he was Supreme Commander of the Allied Expeditionary Force in Europe and achieved the 5-star rank as General of the Army. Eisenhower was pivotal in the planning and supervision of 2 of the most consequential military campaigns of World War II. Operation Torch in the North Africa campaign in 1942 to 1943, and the invasion of Normandy in 1944. In the world of entertainment, there were several births on this day. In 1893, Lillian Gish, American silent film and stage actress, was born in Springfield, Ohio. In 1896, Bud Flanagan was born as Chaim Reuben Weintrop in Whitechapel, London. He was an English comedian, probably most famous for his duo act with Chesney Allen. In 1927, Sir Roger Moore, British actor most famous for portraying James Bond and the Saint, was born in Stockwell, London. In 1940, Sir Cliff Richard, born Harry Roger Webb, in Lucknow, British India. His total sales of over 21.5 million singles in the United Kingdom, and as of 2012, was the third top-selling artist in UK singles chart history, behind the Beatles and Elvis Presley. And deaths on this day. In 1066, Harold Godwinson, last crowned Anglo-Saxon King of England, was killed at the Battle of Hastings, aged about 44. The decisive victory in this battle by the forces of Duke William of Normandy marked the beginning of the Norman conquest of England, changing the face of the country forever. In 1945, Lionel Martin, English businessman who co-founded Aston Martin, died aged 67, following a traffic accident in which he was knocked off his bike. And again, in the world of entertainment, there were several deaths on this day. In 1959, Errol Flynn, Australian actor probably most famous for portraying Captain Blood and Robin Hood, died of a heart attack aged 50. In 1990, Leonard Bernstein, American Grammy, Emmy and Tony Award-winning conductor and composer, who wrote West Side Story, died of a heart attack aged 72. In 2016, Jean Alexander, British actress, most famous for playing Hilda Ogden in Coronation Street, died aged 90. And in 2022, Robbie Coltrane, Scottish comedian and BAFTA award-winning actor, whose most famous roles included Fitz in the TV series Cracker and Hagrid in the Harry Potter films, died aged 72. Now, on to the news. We hope you enjoy our selection of articles for this week.
Ister's deputy mayor joined local families at an Apple Day event in the town over the weekend. The event, held at Langford Community Orchard, saw families enjoying a range of activities. These included watching the apple pressing process, tasting fresh juice, finding bugs and birds hidden around the orchard, and eating cakes. A spokesperson for Langford Community Orchard Group said, "We would like to thank everyone who enjoyed Apple Day with us this year on a lovely sunny afternoon." Councillor Paul Wheatley, Deputy Mayor, visited us when we had many families enjoying the activities.
The £500,000 spent on West Oxfordshire District Council's chambers has been labelled a vanity project due to the lack of community use in it. Liam Walker, head of the county's Conservatives, has called the £457,000 refurbishment of West Oxfordshire District Council chambers a disgrace after the local authority could only confirm it had been used by four community groups since its unveiling. The updated chamber was opened in May 2024, having been completed in February, with the Lib Dem-led coalition stating that a benefit of the required renovation was the creation of a space which could be used by both the council and community. However, a recent Freedom of Information request by Mr. Walker has shown that no income has been generated. In addition, the council could only confirm that four groups had used it. These were the Transport Training, Action Oxfordshire, the Health and Wellbeing Alliance, and Whitney Buttercross Scout Group. The leader of the Conservatives said, "This is a classic example of the Lib Dems talking a good game, but failing to deliver." £500,000 of taxpayers' money has been squandered on a vanity project that was meant to serve the community. He added, "That's not value for money, it's a disgrace." In response to the Freedom of Information request, the District Council said the driving factor wasn't commercial and added that availability of the chamber is sometimes restricted due to council meetings. The council has been contacted for a response to Mr. Walker's criticisms. The county and district councillor added, "At a time when families are struggling with the cost of living and local services are under real pressure, the council should be investing in projects that genuinely help people, not wasting huge sums on a chamber that's gathering dust. Residents will rightly be asking what on earth the Lib Dems were thinking." This is not the only issue Mr. Walker has criticised the district council for. He has also spoken out on the Ensham Park and Ride, which has been unused since its completion in January 2024. In fact, no vehicles will be parked in the 850 spaces at the £51 million project until the funding is secured for the infrastructure to connect it to the A40. Mr. Walker described it as outrageous. He said, "The Ensham Park and Ride site continues to be an embarrassment for the council administration, with no clear plan as to when this will really be operational." Meanwhile, Oxfordshire County Council said in a statement, "When in use, Ensham Park and Ride will offer frequent bus services with direct connections to Oxford and the surrounding areas."
A Range Rover that has been at the bottom of the Thames for the past 9 months has finally been recovered. The stranded SUV was winched out of the River Thames at Bablock Hythe near Whitney. Peter Kelland of the Ferryman Inn said the luxury off-roader had rolled into the river last Christmas when its owners came to the pub for a meal. But the driver had left the vehicle in drive when she got out, leaving it to steadily roll into the river. And because the car was fully submerged underneath the water, boats were at risk of collision with its roof. The Environment Agency, which was notified of the stranded car after it went in the water, said the insurance company had removed it. Sources told us that after a lengthy investigation, officers tracked down the owner of the vehicle and got their insurer's details. We contacted the insurer, explained the situation and the consequences of failing to act, we were told. The insurer then removed the vehicle at their cost.
Two Oxfordshire-based Formula One teams have announced losses totalling £64.4 million. Grove-based Williams and Enstone-based Alpine announced after-tax losses of £49.8 million and £14.6 million for 2024, respectively. Meanwhile, Banbury-based Haas F1 team, the newest team currently on the grid, having joined the sport in 2016, posted a £6.493 million profit. Annual accounts have recently been published for all three Oxfordshire-based teams, which collectively employ more than 2,000 people, many from the county. Williams, who finished ninth in the Constructors' League last year with 17 points, said that while the business posted a loss, it is in line with expectations. The group's strategy is to continue investing in all areas of the business to drive both on-track and commercial performance in pursuit of success in the medium and long term, Williams said. Revenue increased in 2024 as a result of higher commercial rights revenue associated with finishing seventh in the 2023 Constructors' Championship. In 2022, they were 10th. And also increased sponsorship revenue as the team adds to its stable of high-quality commercial partners. As reported, Williams is currently in the middle of getting planning permission for a major expansion to its Grove headquarters near Wantage. Earlier this year, Williams put forward plans for a new factory, technology and testing facilities, new office accommodation, and new staff facilities. Williams added, "In order to meet any shortfall, the directors will seek additional shareholder support from the company's owners, who have indicated they will continue to be supportive. By placing reliance on other group entities for financial support, the directors acknowledged that there can be no certainty that this support will continue, although at the date of approval of these financial statements, they have no reason to believe that it will not do so. Alpine, in 2024, finished higher than any of the three Oxfordshire teams in the F1 standings at sixth, with 65 points. A turnover for the year, comprising mainly of sponsorship income and prize money, was £238.5 million, up around £11 million year on year. But the after-tax loss for 2024 was £14.6 million. The year prior, it had posted a £7.8 million profit. The weakened on-track performance in 2023 versus 2022 negatively impacted prize money by 12.9%, Alpine said. Sponsorship and merchandising revenues remained broadly consistent. While the company has maintained a disciplined approach to cost control, continued inflationary pressures alongside organisational restructure costs, changes in government research and development credits, and additional development expenditure ahead of future regulation changes have led to a rise in operating costs of 7.9%. Haas said, "The company continues to strengthen its capabilities as a competitive race team through targeted investment across several key areas. This strategic growth in personnel is expected to enhance overall performance levels."
A housing development near Blenheim Palace has won a national award. Blenheim Estate Homes, Pye Homes and Adam Architecture were presented with the Landowner Award at the King's Foundation Building and Legacy Awards for their Parkview development in Woodstock. The award, in their third year, celebrate landowners who prioritise thoughtful placemaking and lasting legacy. Parkview was recognised for its effort to partner with councils, integrating with Woodstock, offering commercial units, job opportunities, walkable layouts and home working spaces, and for respecting Woodstock's history and the site's proximity to Blenheim Palace. It features local materials, ensuring energy efficiency by design and traditional methods of construction and craft. Roger File of Blenheim Estate Homes and Pye Homes said, "Parkview has been carefully planned and built to create a development of which our community can be proud. So to take home the Landowner Award this year is a huge testament to this." Formed in 2017, the Building a Legacy Network brings together landowners, developers and consultants to meet, debate and share knowledge about sustainable urban development with the aim of building the next generation of new places.
An historic ceremony dating back to the 1500s will take place in Oxford next week. The Court Sermon and Glove Ceremony, marking the start of the legal year, will be held at Christchurch Cathedral on Tuesday. It is one of Oxfordshire's oldest traditions, drawing attendance from the judiciary, civic leaders, the university, and the wider community. The ceremony, which will run from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m, is described as a wonderful occasion of reflection, music, and fellowship in the magnificent surroundings of Christchurch. At last year's ceremony, a pair of white gloves were ceremonially presented to Mr. Justice Murray, the then presiding judge of the High Court's South Eastern Circuit, by the then Lord Mayor of Oxford, Mike Rowley, to thank him and his fellow legal professionals for their work in the county.
Primary school near Didcot welcomed back former pupils as it celebrated its 75th year. Chiltern County Primary School, which opened at its current site in 1950, marked the milestone on Thursday, October the 2nd. The celebrations saw the school delve into its archives, bringing out old registers, photographs, head teacher reports, and uniform. the school also set up an Amazon wish list, receiving gifts such as new wet play games, sensory toys and equipment to support new play provision in Key Stage 1. A highlight of the day was a competition inviting children to design a commemorative flag with the winning flag raised.
Tributes have been paid after the death of an Oxford eccentric who often walked the city streets barefoot. Goldson Joseph was a well-known character, especially in the city centre and Cowley, who died on Tuesday, September the 30th. Mike Wiggins, who knew the 61-year-old, said, "Goldson was just a simple guy who didn't want much out of life. He could be found regularly outside Templar's shopping centre in Cowley alone." Indeed, Mr. Wiggins said that Mr. Joseph would often walk around barefoot and was sometimes seen on a hired bike. "Over the years, he would shout at the top of his voice," added Mr. Wiggins, "just to get attention, but that eventually stopped. Goldson would sit outside shops on the Cowley Road for hours on the pavement and say hello to total strangers. Some would stop for a chat." Others on social media were quick to also pay tribute to the eccentric.
Dogs and their owners have taken to the water at a leisure centre in North Oxfordshire. The annual dog swim returned to Wood Green Leisure Centre in Banbury towards the end of September, offering dogs a chance to splash around in the pool in a series of one-hour sessions. Wood Green Leisure Centre said, "Our favourite weekend of the year. We loved getting to meet all of you and your adorable pups." The event included sessions for different ages and sizes, and followed on from the successes of last year's event, which saw more than 150 dogs enter the water. Around 250 swimmers attended, and 164 dogs enjoyed a swim at the outdoor pool the previous year.
A debate on whether Kidlington should remain as a village or become a town will take place later this month. Kidlington has seen a number of large planning applications being submitted and approved in recent years, including the Oxford United Stadium at the Triangle. Plans for hundreds of new homes have resulted in some locals raising concerns about the so-called Kidlington Gap, which separates Oxford from the village being swallowed up. Earlier this year, Kidlington Parish Council released a survey asking for views on whether it should become a town. The Parish Council said this would be a title change only and would not affect the services we provide, the councillors who represent you, or the amount of council tax you pay. The aim is to better reflect the size, responsibilities and growing importance of Kidlington as a key local centre, especially as thousands of new homes are being built in the surrounding area and our population continues to increase. The Parish Council added that this could strengthen the local body's ability to influence future decisions, considering plans for local government reorganisation in Oxfordshire in 2028. Now the authority is set to debate whether Kidlington should stay as a village or become a town at the next full council meeting on October the 30th. Before then, Parish Councillor Melanie Moorhouse said residents can ask questions or share their thoughts at two drop-in engagement sessions. These will take place at Exeter Hall on October the 17th from 12 noon until 4 p.m. and on October the 18th from 10 a.m. until 12:30 p.m. Ian Middleton, who sits on Kidlington Parish Council, Charwell District Council and Oxfordshire County Council, previously said, considering the huge increase in population that we're about to see, that it might be difficult for Kidlington to justify continuing to call itself a village. He added, "It's clear that there are advantages to becoming a town, but I know that villager identity is very important to many residents, and we need to respect that." Mr. Middleton also previously said that becoming a town could help Kidlington. He said, Villagers don't want to end up living in a suburb of Oxford, and paradoxically, becoming a town may be a way of resisting that. He added, I think it's right to ask now if residents are prepared to welcome the economic and community benefits that could be available to them as a town, or accept the potential limitations of remaining classified as a village.
Author Dame Jilly Cooper has died, aged 88, after suffering a fall over the weekend. The author, known for her romance novels, died on Sunday morning following the fall. Dame Jilly lived in the Cotswolds in Bisley, near Stroud. Her family said, "It is with great sadness that we announce the death of Dame Jilly Cooper, DBE, who died on Sunday morning after a fall at the age of 88. Her children said in a statement, "Mum was the shining light in all of our lives. Her love for all of her family and friends knew no bounds. Her unexpected death has come as a complete shock. We are so proud of everything she achieved in her life and can't begin to imagine life without her infectious smile and laughter all around us."
An historic former Chinese takeaway, which cannot be demolished, is continuing to deteriorate, leading to calls for action to be taken. The former Liaison restaurant opposite the Westgate Centre has looked in a poor state of repair for years and has become a city centre eyesore. But 29/29A Castle Street cannot be demolished because it is so historic that it is Grade 2 listed, and the paintwork is now peeling off the front of the building. The restaurant at the entrance to the Oxford Castle Quarter closed years ago and is surrounded on all sides by modern developments, including the Wetherspoons pub, the Swan and Castle. At the start of the year, the City Council said some progress had been made as the owner of the building had been contacted. A spokesman said at the time, "The council has successfully been in contact with the building owners of 29/29A Castle Street to discuss the future of the building. As a result of this process, we hope there will be a satisfactory resolution in the near future. But it appears that nothing has been done so far to renovate the building, and Ian Green, chairman of Oxford Civic Society, has called for action to be taken." He said, "It's a great shame that this interesting architectural history is disintegrating. No maintenance is taking place. At the moment, it's a blot on the landscape, and I would like to see it renovated and brought back into use in some way. It could be used by a small business, or it could be restored and used for residential purposes. I would love to see some progress on this." In 2023, Save Britain's Heritage, the independent voice on conservation, placed 29/29A on its own buildings at risk register. The heritage group recognised the building contained remains of an original medieval structure. It is understood there has never been another building on the site. It is the first encroachment on the castle moat and contains substantial medieval timber work. The building was listed Grade 2 in 1977, with the structure dated as late 17th century. But Save Britain's Heritage said it was even older. A statement said earlier, "The year before the date of the listing, an unpublished set of notes and drawings, now lodged in the archive of the Oxfordshire History Centre, indicated that there is evidence of medieval roofing in the cellar, that two timber frame walls survive from the original superstructure, and that there was a medieval roof running parallel to Castle Street with king struts, collars and clasps purlins." In 2004, the owners of the restaurant at the time were fined £17,000 for violating food safety regulations. The City Council and Oxford Preservation Trust have been asked to comment.
Hundreds of pounds have been raised for Alzheimer's UK by a care home in Bryes Norton. A bike-a-thon at Bryes Meadow Lodge was organised in support of care assistant Ian Londesborough, who is running a half marathon this October in aid of the charity. Colleagues, residents, families and members of the wider Bryce Norton community join together for a day of cycling challenges, live music and community spirit. Frances Payne, home manager at Bryce Meadow Lodge, said, "We're so thrilled with the success of the bikeathon. It was wonderful to see our residents, colleagues, families and neighbours all coming together for such a meaningful cause. The support shown for Ian and Alzheimer's UK was incredible, and we're so proud of the generosity and kindness shared on the day. The event raised £254.41 through activities and donations, while Mr. Londesborough raised an additional £500. Together, the total more than tripled his original fundraising target of £250. Guests enjoyed a tombola, refreshments and live entertainment from May's Melodies. It follows a summer of activities at Bryce Meadow Lodge, including garden parties, music afternoons and community gatherings. The home is preparing a calendar of seasonal events."
The owners of a farm selling Christmas trees are relieved after Thames Water postponed major water mains work until the new year. Thames Water previously announced rolling road closures would be in place through Christmas Common near Watlington over about 15 weeks in the run-up to the festive period. It is planning to replace 1.5 miles of a clean water main. The Tree Barn Farm, which has provided Christmas trees for venues including Buckingham Palace and Downing Street, warned that any road closure would be at its very busiest time of year for harvesting and sales. The farm plants 17,000 new trees each year and said up to 2,000 cars a day visited the farm to buy trees in the weekends in the run-up to Christmas. A co-owner, Jane Ingram, said earlier even a partial closure would cause untenable tailbacks. "Customers won't stand it. They'll arrive tired, hungry and cross. We will lose custom," she said. "If they close the road completely and say access only, then we're out of business and it's a complete waste of our year. We obviously get paid for the trees only after we've sold them. We've got some big bills to pay now. We've got a lot of labour. There'd be a very large hole we'd never be able to fill." Rainer Hecken, publican at the Fox and Hounds in the village, added, "Any road closure would devastate local businesses." Work had been due to start on about October the 20th, but now Thames Water has announced that the work will be postponed until early in 2026. A Thames Water spokesman said, "The mains replacement project along Nettlebed Henley in Christmas Common has now been postponed until the new year, following a meeting of all stakeholders. This is to allow for the plans to be communicated to all residents, businesses and road users, and to ensure the work is carried out safely, efficiently, while maintaining continued access via clearly signposted diversion routes. This essential upgrade is being carried out due to the history of bursts. By replacing the ageing infrastructure, we aim to significantly reduce the risk of future incidents and improve the long-term reliability of the local water supply." The exact origins of the reasons for the name of Christmas Common are unknown. Theories include that it was related to a Christmas truce during a civil war battle in the area, or that it came from an old family name, or was due to the large amount of holly bushes in the area. A county council spokesman said before Thames Water's announcement that the work was initially planned before Christmas to try to ensure it could be completed before ground level temperatures dropped to levels that could prevent pipe laying.
A vehicle recycling company has been crowned the overall winner of at the 2025 in Enterprise Oxfordshire Awards. ASM Auto Recycling in Moreton near Tame took home the top honour after also claiming the Environmentally Sustainable Business of the Year award. Judges praised the firm's circular business model, which includes repairable vehicle auctions, sale of quality reclaimed parts, and innovative recycling partnerships. The business was recognised for its measurable emission reduction targets, community engagement, and workforce empowerment. It says its approach to the climate crisis is rooted in innovation and long-term resilience. From reducing single-use plastics and generating renewable energy on site to rethinking traditional recycling models, it aims to show how the automotive industry can evolve to cut emissions and protect the environment. A spokesperson said, ASM Auto Recycling's win shows innovation and responsibility can go hand in hand, setting an example for others. For Oxfordshire residents, the message is clear. The county is fostering business success and building a greener, fairer, more resilient economy for future generations.
The Labour leader of Oxford City Council has declined to say whether her party would scrap the traffic filters if they were in charge of transport policy. This comes despite the Labour group opposing the temporary £5 congestion charge, which will be put in place on for 6 roads in the city later this month. The scheme was approved last month by Oxfordshire County Council, who are responsible for transport decisions. It will be replaced by the traffic filter trial when Botley Road reopens in August 2026, which means motorists will be fined up to £70 for driving through the same roads affected by the congestion charge. The Labour Group proposed a motion to say the City Council opposes the scheme, which was passed in July. Independent Councillor Sarge Malik asked whether this also means they oppose the traffic filters, in a written question to the Labour leader of the City Council, Susan Brown. She responded in writing that the County Council had undermined public confidence and consent to traffic measures, and that a new approach was needed. At the full Council meeting on Monday, October the 6th, Councillor Malik said he was disappointed with the answer and pointed out that a fellow Labour City Councillor, Jemima Hunt, has spoken in support of the congestion charge. He added, "People want to know what your policy is. Where do you stand on it?" Councillor Brown replied, "It is absolutely clear that the Labour Party locally has been completely against the congestion charge. I am aware that a member of our group turned up," she was speaking in a personal capacity, not as a member of our group, "when she made those representations. It's the County Council that sets transport policy. They've been very clear with us over a lengthy period that they are not interested in listening to the views of the City Council when it comes to the detail of transport policy. Under the government's plans to change the structure of local authorities, Oxfordshire's existing councils will be replaced with unitary councils which have control over all services rather than being split between a city and county council. The Labour group on the City Council want to create a greater Oxford Council, which would include Oxford and surrounding areas and villages like Kidlington, Botley and Wheatley." Councillor Brown added, "As and when we are a unitary council making our own transport policy, we will be able to make our own decisions. Up until that point, we are not."
Oxford United have a number of players jetting off around the world as the international break returns. 7 players in total will be representing their nations during this round of international fixtures, both at senior and under 21 levels. Filip Krastev has been called up to Bulgaria's national squad for the first time since joining Oxford and will face Turkey and Spain in crucial World Cup qualifiers. Greg Lee is heading back to Jamaica, who are currently leading their World Cup qualifying group and will face Curacao and Bermuda. Ole Romney, who has not yet featured for Oxford this season due to injury, has been included in Indonesia's squad for their World Cup qualifiers against Saudi Arabia and Iraq. Netherlands-born Romney joined the youths in January from FC Utrecht. There are two Northern Ireland call-ups, with Brody Spencer and Kieran Brown both on duty. Brown is another yet to feature this season through injury, but despite this, has been called up by his nation for games against Slovakia and Germany, both at home. Mark Harris and Luke Harris will represent Wales at senior and under 21 level, respectively. Oxford United will not be back to action until October the 18th when they take on Derby County.
Notice to listeners of Oxhawk who may wish to use an Alexa smart speaker to access our service. To listen to Oxtalk on an Alexa device, you can use the talking newspaper skill. You will need to first enable the skill. To do this, simply say, "Alexa, enable talking newspaper." Then, to listen to Oxtalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open talking newspaper.
Welcome to your talking newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have any problems listening to Oxtalk using an Alexa device, it could be due to the way that your device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set it up in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Oxtalk and we will try to help.
A floodplain restoration, improved insulation for a local museum, and a giveaway of at least 1,600 new trees are just a few of the projects to be given financial help by Vale of Whitehorse District Council this autumn. The council has announced grants totalling £100,000 for 16 organisations, including charities and community groups, through its Climate Action Fund. These local projects collectively aim to save energy and resources, help nature recovery, or empower people to make sustainable choices. Councillor Hayley Gascoigne, Cabinet Member for Environmental Services, Climate Action and Nature Recovery at the Council, said, "This is the fifth year we have offered the Climate Action Fund to groups across the Vale, and it's as popular as ever. We have been very impressed by the quality and ingenuity of the proposals, with people looking to tackle environmental issues. In addition to a variety of ideas, we are also seeing abundant enthusiasm from all applicants to make improvements to their local areas, to take action for the climate, and to help build nature recovery. We are so pleased we can support and encourage so many of these groups. In Wantage, secondary window glazing will be installed at Vale and Downland Museum to improve insulation and reduce heat loss. Meanwhile, 1,600 native trees will be distributed to households across the Vale of Whitehorse for free by the International Tree Foundation, and the Longmead Foundation will receive money to restore a floodplain."
A popular Oxfordshire park has won a Royal Horticultural Gold Award. Whitney's 37-acre lake and country park has scored a gold award at the Thames and Chilterns in Bloom Awards. Organised by the Royal Horticultural Society, the awards assess horticultural excellence, environmental responsibility and community participation. The park in the south of the town scored the highest rating, which the town council said it was absolutely delighted about. Whitney Town Council's spokesman said, "This recognition highlights just how important ongoing maintenance, care improvements and a strong management plan are in shaping the park into a thriving green space for both people and wildlife. From biodiversity projects and community activities to enhanced facilities and sustainable upkeep, every step has played a role in this achievement." The council also highlighted that the lake, which is a flooded gravel pit and prohibits swimming, was awarded local nature reserve status this year. A spokesman added, "A huge thank you goes to our dedicated staff and volunteers."
Romance fraud is becoming increasingly sophisticated, according to police. Thames Valley Police is warning people to stay vigilant as romance fraud cost victims across the country over £106 million last year. Detective Inspector Duncan Wynne, head of the Central Fraud Unit, said this type of fraud is becoming increasingly sophisticated, with criminals deploying a range of tactics, including stolen identities, fake online profiles, and psychological manipulation. The inspector emphasised the financial and emotional impact of romance fraud, describing it as a deeply personal betrayal that can have a devastating emotional impact. As part of a campaign to raise awareness around romance fraud, Thames Valley Police supported the launch of the second season of the BBC Sounds podcast Love Bombed, Who is Alex?, a series that explores the impact of these frauds. One episode of the series features Thames Valley Police and the force's efforts to investigate romance fraud and support the victims. Inspector Wynne emphasised the importance of supporting and not shaming those targeted, as fraudsters exploit shame as a master emotion that can discourage their victims from reporting the crime. The inspector highlighted the manipulative tactics often deployed by romance fraudsters. Mentioning money early in the communication normalises talking about it to make later requests seem legitimate and reasonable. Fraudsters will also use emotionally fueled responses, such as being in distress, to prompt the victim to act quickly without having time to think it through or seek advice. Isolation is also a key tactic, as fraudsters will cut victims off from sources of emotional support, which get framed as romantic, and later serves as a platform to gain control over the victim. Thames Valley Police advises people to never send money online to someone they have not met in person, and to be cautious about moving online chats off the initial meeting platform, as this is sometimes an effort to gain more frequent access to you. You should also be cautious of communicating very early or late in the day, as this can leave you sleep deprived and impede your decision-making process, according to police. Other police tips include using reverse image searches to check if photos from an online profile appear elsewhere, and to talk about the situation to friends and family if it feels odd. We urge everyone to stay vigilant and look out for signs of coercive behaviour, especially when meeting people online, Inspector Wynne said. If you think you or someone you know may be a victim, please report it. Help is available and you are not alone. More information about Thames Valley Police It's Not Your Fault campaign is available via the police website, and fraud can be reported via Action Fraud by calling 0300 123 0240 or visiting actionfraud.police.uk. You can also make a report by calling 101.
Millett's Farm Centre's Pick Your Own Pumpkin in Oxfordshire has been named among the best in the UK. October is now upon us and the countdown to Halloween has started, with many families across the country having made a new tradition of visiting a pumpkin patch. This allows children to pick their own pumpkins before carving, and one of the best locations for this is just outside of Oxford. Millett's Farm Centre in Kingston Road, Frilford, near Abingdon, has been named the second best pumpkin patch in the country. Outdoor Toys has refreshed its findings from the past 2 years to uncover the UK's must-visit pumpkin patches for 2025. By looking at factors such as entry prices, annual Google searches and Instagram posts, the team has revealed the top farms to visit in the run-up to Halloween. Entry to Millett's Farm Centre is £3 per person. It has the highest number of annual searches among the top three, 474,600, and also appears in the most Instagram posts with 24,400. For the third year in a row, Doddington Hall has topped the list as the best pumpkin patch in the UK, with an overall score of 9.49 out of 10. Millett's Farm Centre also hosts an annual Halloween spooktacular, which includes pumpkin picking, a Halloween circus, and even a spooky disco.
People who are looking to stop smoking can now access support at a shopping centre in Oxford. Templar Square has teamed up with Smoke Free Oxen to host a weekly NHS pop-up in the unit next to Jungle, offering free confidential services every Tuesday. The service includes one-to-one advice, free nicotine replacement products, access to stop smoking medications, and tailored guidance to help individuals to quit smoking and improve their health. Centre manager Carla Scaroni said, "We value the opportunity to be working with Smoke-Free Oxen to bring this important service directly to the heart of the Cowley community. By hosting the weekly pop-up, we're giving local residents access to professional services and resources for free, which can aid in quitting smoking for good and working towards a healthy lifestyle." The pop-up is part of the shopping centre's ongoing commitment to supporting community health and well-being, transforming the space into more than just a retail destination.
An artist from Oxford will have her work exhibited at an upcoming show at the Louvre in Paris, home of the Mona Lisa. Bridget Farrons, an artist from Iffley, said she is hugely excited to have her paintings displayed as part of an international exhibition in one of the culture capitals of Europe. She began painting about 16 years ago as an artistic hobby alongside her day job as a corporate leadership coach. Taking lessons from local artist Kieran Stiles, the artist started publicising her work with Oxfordshire Art Weeks and on Instagram to share her creativity on a small scale. That scale changed, however, when she was approached by international art curator RTO Gallery from Canada, who platformed her work on a global stage. "When I picked myself up off the floor in amazement," Mrs. Farrons said, about when she received the gallery's email. I checked them out and found them absolutely genuine, and they seemed like a really good gallery. I never would have asked to be represented because I don't consider myself a professional painter, but it's just been the most wonderful gift. It's really spurred my painting on and made me feel differently about calling myself an artist. Now Mrs. Farrands has displayed work in Chelsea, London, at the Women in Art Biennale in Stockholm, where she sold her biggest ever piece, and soon at Carousel du Louvre in Paris. The artist said, "Showing my paintings beyond just my husband and family takes confidence. Instagram and Art Weeks have been super places to get wider exposure and feedback and have encouraged me hugely to get more public about my art. So the Louvre Gallery feels like a huge boost. It's hugely exciting just to have an exhibition with the word Louvre in the title." Although she came to painting later on, Mrs. Farrands explained that all her life she's been a bit frustrated since she was prevented from going to art school at the age of 16. "But I kept doing creative things like stitching creative costumes for Strictly Come Dancing. So it's kind of been a thread that's run through my life," she said. Now she combines her dual career as an artist and a leadership coach, and she thinks there's more in common between the two than it may appear. The Paris exhibition will take place in the shopping mall attached to the entrance to the world-class Louvre Museum, the Carousel du Louvre in a public exhibition space from October the 17th to the 19th.
Neighbourhood police teams have made progress in tackling crime and improving public safety across Oxford City Centre and Cowley. A series of targeted operations under Operation Brigand, focused on theft from the person, contributed to a 38% year-to-date reduction in theft from the person offences, with figures dropping from 214 to 133. Between April and August 2025. This is attributed to proactive disruption of known offenders, increased stop checks, and widespread crime prevention messaging. Officers worked closely with tourists, tour guides, shopping centres, and transport hubs to increase awareness. On Friday, August the 15th, the neighbourhood policing team led a Safer Business Action Day. Officers and police community support officers visited retailers around Cowley Road and the city centre, discussing crime concerns and sharing prevention tips. At the same time, Project Servitor teams carried out three deployments across the city, speaking with those out and about in the city and disrupting those looking to commit crime. The initiative received positive feedback from residents, who appreciated the visible police presence. Throughout August, officers focused on antisocial behaviour, which local residents had identified as a priority. They responded to reports of antisocial behaviour, engaged with victims, and patrolled hotspots.
A freshly resurfaced road on the edge of Oxford has been dug up within weeks of it being finished. Thames Water is carrying out work in Ensham Road, Botley, that involves digging up the newly resurfaced road. Work started on Sunday and is being controlled by temporary two-way traffic lights. Resurfacing work was completed between August the 11th and September the 15th by Oxfordshire County Council. Householder Nicola Wells said, "You really couldn't make it up." Thames Water has has been asked what the work was for and to explain why the newly resurfaced road needed to be dug up, but a spokesman did not respond to our request for comment.
A scarecrow made to look like Jeremy Clarkson has been entered into a care home competition. The Cotswold Home in Bradwell Village near Burford created the scarecrow for the Elizabeth Finn Homes Interhome Scarecrow Challenge, drawing inspiration from the broadcaster's farming work and public support for British agriculture. The challenge was launched across the Elizabeth Finn Homes group to mark the harvest season, celebrate Thanksgiving, and highlight the gardens and vegetables grown by residents and staff. The clothes for the scarecrow were donated by staff and local businesses, with a beanie from Stowe Ag and a wheelbarrow from Actims in Carterton.
A 24-hour fishing challenge has raised thousands of pounds for a cancer support centre near Bicester. The Fishathon, held at Pimlico Farm in Tusmore, has raised £3,670 through a Just Giving page for the Hummingbird Cancer Support Centre in Launton. Five pairs of anglers were each tasked with raising £200, with the initial target being £1,000. Keith Harvey, who organised the event, said, "I decided to organise this as I had done so in the past and for around 20 years did the same for Great Ormond Street Children's Hospital charity. So I knew this was a winning event that would get good support. My good friend and fellow Freemason, Graham Darby, has been diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. So I wanted to support the family and Graham the best way I could. He suggested the wonderful Hummingbird Centre as they are providing fantastic support to the Darby family and will continue to do so. Due to the water levels being low after an exceptionally dry and warm summer, the anglers were unable to catch many fish, but Mr. Harvey said it was still well worth the effort. He added, all support is raised from Freemasons and their families, but what I didn't expect was the amount pledged by our friends and neighbours in Launton Vista and the wider community. That was tremendous and proves the Hummingbird is held in very high esteem by everyone."
Rumours of Emma Watson getting engaged to marry at Oxford University are circling after she flashed a diamond ring on her ring finger. The Hollywood star, who played Hermione Granger in all 8 Harry Potter movies, grew up in the city after being born in Paris. Having taken an indefinite leave from acting in recent years, she has instead been focused on pursuing her academic goals. Ms. Watson opted to study a master's degree in creative writing in September 2023, before it was announced in February that she had switched to a DPhil. Now rumours are starting to circulate suggesting that the 35-year-old may have become engaged to marry. Appearing at Paris Fashion Week, the actress seemed unusually keen to spend time in front of the cameras outside the Miu Miu show at the Palais de Lina, according to the Daily Mail. On her left hand, Miss Watson was wearing an impressive vintage-style sparkler on her ring finger containing a large diamond. As recently as last month, the actress described the pressure to marry from society as violence and cruelty towards women. Speaking on Jay Shetty's On Purpose podcast, she added, "I hope it happens to me, but I don't feel entitled to it. It will either be part of my purpose here and my destiny, or it won't."
Calls for better enforcement of illegal e-bikes in Witney and West Oxfordshire have been supported by the District Council amid growing fears of being hit by riders travelling at unsafe speeds. A motion called for West Oxfordshire District Council to explore options for an enforcement and public safety campaign with Thames Valley Police and the County Council, and to explore opportunities for funding community safety initiatives like signage and cycle safety workshops. It also asks the leader of the council to write to the police and crime commissioner for the Thames Valley, urging for enforcement against dangerous and illegal e-bike use in West Oxfordshire to be prioritised. Councillor Liam Walker, who represents Hayley, Minster Lovell and Leafield, put forward the motion, which was discussed at the full council meeting. He said residents across Witney and West Oxfordshire are increasingly concerned about the illegal and unsafe use of e-bikes on our streets and pavements. This is not about being against cycling and e-bikes. These modes of getting around can play a positive role in promoting sustainable transport. But when they are used illegally or modified to reach high speeds, they become a danger to pedestrians, drivers, and the riders themselves. People should feel safe walking through our town centres and villages without fear of being hit by an e-bike ridden at speed on the pavements. Whilst enforcement lies with Thames Valley Police, I believe this council has a role to play in raising awareness, supporting community safety initiatives, and working in partnership with police and the County Council as Highways Authority. He said he had been contacted by a number of residents over the issue, including one who almost had an illegal e-bike rider crash into the back of their car while they were driving. The motion passed with 38 votes for and one abstention. Councillor Steve Cozier, who represents Standlake, Aston and Stanton Harcourt, said he would support the motion but argued that it was punitive and that it lacked positive measures such as subsidised helmets, training schemes or bike rental programmes. A number of councillors said the police and crime commissioner should be urged to put more money and resources into enforcing speeding for both bikes and e-bikes. Councillor Michael Brooker, who represents Witney South, said it is getting out of control and it is ridiculous how much they are abusing the ability to carry on these illegal activities, knowing they are not going to be apprehended. We're on the back foot on this, though. This has been going on for a few years now. The cuts that we're seeing to the police over the previous decade or so has had a major effect.
An Oxford fish and chip shop is making history as it closes in on the title of Britain's Best. Harrison's Fish and Chips on Elms Parade, Botley, has taken another step towards the Best Takeaway in the Country prize after being named within the top 20 establishments by the National Fish and Chip Awards. In September, 40 chippies from across England, Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland were shortlisted by the National Federation of Fish Fryers, NFFF, a number that has now been halved for the semi-final stage, with the top 10 to be announced in the coming weeks. Among the factors the judges analysed were the shop's approaches to produce selection, industry knowledge, quality and sustainability. Orion Harris of The Takeaway said, "We're proud, happy and so excited to be named among the top 20 fish and chip shops in the UK." Mr. Harrison said that, to the best of his knowledge, this is the first time a fish and chip shop from Oxfordshire has made it this far, and so he is proud that they have made history. He said, "It's our first time reaching this shortlist and the first ever from Oxfordshire. A huge thank you to our amazing team and loyal customers for helping us make local history. Harrison's, like the other shortlisted names, will be aiming to take the prize from last year's winner, Yarn Road Fish and Chips in Darlington, County Durham. Speaking last month, Mr. Harrison said that the hospitality industry is in challenging times. He said, "Our ability to adapt quickly to challenges has been vital in helping us navigate the recent struggles facing the hospitality industry, allowing us to continue serving our community despite the difficult climate. With cod quotas being cut, we knew we had to think on our feet," he added. "Rather than letting it hold us back, we introduced over 10 alternative species to our menu. From lemon sole to hake, hokey to plaice, we've kept things exciting for our customers while making sure there's still plenty of choice on the plate." Andrew Crook, president of the NFFF, which was established over 100 years ago in 1913, said, "There's nowhere to hide when a chippy puts itself forward for the National Fish and Chip Awards." He added, "Fish and chips hold such a special place in people's hearts, and it's our responsibility to provide steer so that things stay that way, and these fantastic 20 semi-finalists are great ambassadors for why it's loved so much." The award ceremony will take place in February 2026 in London to announce the new champion.
Sweetheart by Joe Cushnan. Every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 10 o'clock before closing the front door, Bill would call out, "I won't be long." The supermarket was a short walk to the end of the street. The grocery list hardly changed. He was a creature of habit in his 80th year and would always take his time shopping, walking the same route around the aisles on every visit, buying no more than 10 items. He became frustrated very occasionally when products were moved to different parts of the store, but he muttered to himself not to get too cross with the staff. They knew him, and he knew them. It was a friendly place. Bill did not want to upset anyone with petty complaints. The girl on the delicatessen counter was used to him asking for 3 thin slices of ham and a small pork pie. The fishmonger always cut his piece of cod fillet in half and bagged each piece separately. Bill liked to keep one in the fridge and one in the freezer. The lad on the fruit and vegetable section would always help Bill find the best quality potatoes and bananas. Nothing was too much trouble. Bill thought of himself as old school with regard to good manners. He was polite to everyone, but he had noticed a decline in people of all ages saying please and thank you. It doesn't cost anything, he thought, and it's not difficult to be nice. So this supermarket suited him very well with its courteous employees. They were good company. In particular, there was one checkout operator, a nice lady called Diane, who always greeted Bill by saying, "Hello, sweetheart." In his younger days, Bill had found the overuse of chummy words like love, pet, darling, sweetheart, and other variations to be quite irritating. But as he got older, he grew to like it, especially if it sounded sincere. Some shop assistants would say the words on automatic pilot without any warmth, but Diane was genuinely friendly. She was his favourite. It was a bit of a letdown for him when she was on holiday or off sick. But on this day, there she was, sitting waiting for the next customer. "Hello, sweetheart," she beamed as Bill approached. He smiled back and the two chatted as the groceries were scanned. Tuesday and Thursday mornings were good mornings. Back home, Bill opened the front door. "I'm back," he called out. "It's a cold morning." He put his carrier bag on the kitchen table and walked to the living room. He looked at his wife, Betty, and blew her a kiss. He felt his eyes watering. "That Diane called me sweetheart, as she always does, Betty. I think she fancies me. It always reminds me of you calling me sweetheart from the first day we met,
all those years ago. Diane says it like you. She means it.
Bill smiled at his wife's face looking at him from the framed photograph.
I do miss you, Betty. I really do, sweetheart.
That was the last of our articles for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, you can telephone Margaret on 074-96-06-2280. That's 074-96-06-2280. Please remember to leave your name and a contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from the previous 4 weeks are available on our website at www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. The current edition is also available on Alexa using the Talking Newspaper skill. Instructions on how to do this are contained in a separate track in this edition. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more news. So until then, we hope you have a good week.